morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, February 28th, 2020, and the time is 9 a.m. We are meeting in the Senate Finance Room in the State Capitol. Please silence your cell phones. This is Co-Chair Natasha von Imhoff, and I'm joined today by Senator Stedman, Senator Bishop, Senator Olson, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Wilson, and Senator Hoffman. We have a quorum to do business. Our only item on today's agenda is Senate Bill 50, an act imposing an annual education facilities maintenance and construction tax on net earnings from self-employment and wages relating to the administration and enforcement of the educational facilities maintenance and construction tax and providing for an effective date. This is our first hearing on the bill. I'd like to invite Senator Click Bishop and his staff, Darwin Peterson, to the table to present the bill. So please state your name for the record and begin when you're ready. And we've been joined by President Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name's Click Bishop, Senator District C, and Darwin Peterson, let Darwin introduce himself.
Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator Bishop.
Thank you. I'll jump right to it. Senate Bill 50 establishes a education head tax to help raise money for school construction and maintenance. New revenues need to start to be a part of any conversation about Alaska's deficit, albeit this one's a small part in solving the bigger problem. It's also a very important piece of the puzzle, and us members of the Finance Committee, as late as last week, we had the Department of Education here, and we were talking about school construction, both urban and rural. We know the needs, and I've always said, and I'm going right off the script now, just put it right over here. I firmly believe, and I know members of this committee might concur to a degree, but deferred maintenance is a liability on anybody's balance sheet. And just from year over year, and Mr. Peterson will get into the a little bit more of the detail, but last year I think our deferred maintenance at deed for major maintenance and school construction between the two funds was at $113 million for one account and $130 million for the other account. I could be off a little bit. But today, just in 1 year, that has grown to $149 million in deferred maintenance and $142 million in new construction. And, you know, this is not the first time that deferred maintenance has been an issue at this table. We have deferred maintenance across the board in state assets, but I just want to get ahead of the curve. We've got to do something, and I just think this is a small part in going forward and developing some sound economic policy by the legislature going forward to address these issues. Our per capita spending is on par with 1996 when you factor in inflation. Last year, with the help of this committee and the full Senate, we took a bite at helping out in the classroom with education, with the education raffle. And that bill passed unanimously in the Senate. I can't remember the floor vote in the House, but it was close to that. We know what that bill raised last year with those voluntary donations from the permanent fund that went into the classroom. This bill is in tandem, but going the other direction to address the major maintenance and school construction fund. So I just would lastly like to say, you know, we there's about $2.5 billion a year annually that leave the state in non-resident wages. Nothing wrong with non-residents working here. We'd like to see more residents, but that money's going back to their school districts and being used on their local schools. And we should be trying to capture some of that money. And historically, we have paid this since 1912. This bill has been brought forward, I think, about 11 other times. Both Republican and Democrats have tried to run this bill. And Governor Hickel tried this in his second term. And I think the time is right. And thanks for your consideration in hearing the bill today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, again, this is Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator Bishop. From 1919 to 1980, Alaska had an annual employment head tax for the purpose of collecting revenues to help fund schools. The tax went through numerous transformations, but it always charged an equal amount to each employed individual. When it was repealed in 1980, the tax was $10 per person, which, accounting for inflation, has the equivalent value of $30 today. Senate Bill 50 proposes to revive the repealed head tax on employed individuals, both residents and non-residents. It would collect $30 from each person employed in the state. The tax would be withheld from an employee's first paycheck each calendar year, and the tax is deductible from an individual's federal income tax return. According to the most recent statistics from the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development, the state has approximately 406,547 employed individuals. 20.7%, or 84,238 of them, are non-residents, resulting in, as Senator Bishop mentioned, $2.5 billion in wages that are leaving Alaska's economy each year, and in most cases being taxed by the non-residents' home state. Of the 406,547 employed individuals, there are approximately 30,000 self-employed individuals, and that's per the most recent data from the U.S. Census Bureau. The education and self-employed individuals would self-report. They would self-report to the Department of Revenue. The education head tax is estimated to bring in approximately $13 million a year. The revenue would be collected. Or the revenue collected would be deposited into the state's general fund and accounted for separately to pay for the growing maintenance and construction needs of Alaska schools. According to the Department of Education and Early Development, the state's share for the FY21 major school maintenance totals $149 million, and the FY21 school construction totals $142 million, for a total of just under $300 million. In your packets, there are letters of support and resolutions from various municipal assemblies, school districts. And you also have letters from the National Education Association of Alaska, the Alaska Superintendents Association, and the Alaska Municipal League. That concludes my testimony, Madam Chair, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions from committee members? I see Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thank you. Senator, or Mr. Peterson, millennials normally work what we call a gig economy. Sometimes they work three or four jobs within a year, and they may pay this tax three or four times. And so I guess my question is section 2, page 3, where it starts on line 27, the refund of overpayments, is that worse? Are you considering if someone pays, has multiple jobs, employment opportunities, is that where they would repay or apply for repayment for overpayment of that tax?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, let me catch up, because I think if I go to page 3, I was just looking at this. On page 3?
Yeah, line 27.
You're on page 3?
Yes.
I went up to page, at the top of that same page. Mm-hmm. Maybe this will answer your question, or I might be completely off base. Let's start with line 1. An employer is liable for the tax required to be withheld from an employee unless the employer can demonstrate that the employer relied on proof provided by the employee that the tax for that calendar year imposed, yada, 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 had already been paid.
All right. But if I could.
Senator Wilson, continue.
But just in case that most.
Slips through the cracks.
Yeah, slips through the cracks. You know, not a lot of folks may realize that until it comes to tax time and they start looking at their, you know, W-2s or have an accountant or someone else look at their taxes. And if they realize there was an overpayment of that because they worked three or four jobs, just with that, would they be able to, under the refund of overpayments, would that be another chance for them to catch up on that?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilson, yes. If in an event an employee did pay more than once, they would be able to apply to the department for a refund. And the way it would work is the first employer would withhold $30 from the employee's first paycheck. Subsequent jobs or subsequent employers, the employee can just show proof to that employer that they had already paid, and then the employer is off the hook and doesn't need to withhold the additional money. But if it did happen, then yes, they could apply for a refund from the department.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have Senator Stedman followed by Senator Welikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm just curious, just for clarification, the folks in the state that are retired drawing their pensions or Social Security, they're exempt. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, correct. Pensions are not included.
And I have a quick follow-up.
Senator Stedman?
I was wondering if there's been any thought in adding the funds instead of maintenance to go to the public school trust fund, which is run as a percent of market value with a 5% payout. Has that been reviewed or contemplated as a way of trying to build increase the, I guess, the trust value to fund public schools?
No, but it's a good idea.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you just describe in page 4, line 17, 18, it talks about how the funds are accounted, and it says they go into the, I guess it goes into the educational facilities, maintenance and construction fund, and how is that money dispersed? What's the criteria for that? 3705560, I guess.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we do have people available from the Department of Revenue that might be able, and the Department of Education, Economic, and Early Development that might be able to explain that better.
Do we have anybody? Do we have anybody online or in the audience? Okay, would you like to call up a lifeline for that?
I believe we just did. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. If we could have someone from the Department of Education come up and answer Senator Wilikowski's question. Let me know if you would like him to restate the question or if you've heard it sufficiently.
Yes. For the record, Heidi Teschner, Director of Finance and Support Services with the Department of Education and Early Development. And I have Tim Merrig.
Facilities Manager, Department of Education.
Just so we answer correctly, do you mind restating your question?
Yeah, thank you. I was just curious how the funds are, or I guess the criteria for educational facilities maintenance and construction funds under AS 3705560. How is it determined how those funds are used under that statute?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. So right now, the legislature will appropriate funds through the major maintenance or the school construction fund, and based on the department's approved and finalized CI capital improvement project list, the school construction and major maintenance list, depending on what appropriations are provided, we will go down those lists in rank order and distribute funds to districts.
Senator Wilikowski, do you have a follow-up at all? Okay, Senator Olson.
On that point, Madam Chair, Ms. Kushner, what are the thoughts of having the funds dispersed in a different manner as was proposed by the co-chair of finance?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the Public School Trust Fund, as it's established right now, funds the foundation program. Mm-hmm. And I would assume that that fund would have to the change. There would be need to be a change in how that fund funds could be distributed to go towards facilities and construction.
Is there a position? If I can continue, Madam Chair, is there a position by the department as to which way they would favor?
Through the chair, right now we would want to favor towards school construction, major maintenance, school construction.
As it is written. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So just following up on that, I think what might be helpful for this committee is to have just kind of a flow chart, if you will, of what the two different funds are or more that fund formula versus maintenance and what the funding sources are. I believe we had our first lottery that occurred this year that funds the income funds these different funds. I think that might be helpful just to kind of get a visual of what our buckets of money are and what they fund. So if you could provide that to the committee, I think that would be really helpful. And hopefully that's not too big of a list.
Madam Chair, we can do that.
Okay. Are there any other questions before we begin with public testimony? Senator Olson.
Actually, Madam Chair, it's actually for the bill's sponsor, and that has to do with other types of income that other people are getting. For example, number one is the permanent fund dividend, whether that's going to be headed for children and those people that have got investments that are making a living by living off the stock market. Essentially, how do you capture those if that is even considered in this bill?
So if the bill sponsor could designate whether W-2 income versus any other K-1, 1099, et cetera income, so which type of income based on the IRS definition will be taxed? Thank you. Unless there's any other questions for Department of Education? Thank you.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the only thing that's being taxed is wages and self-employed income. So dividends, permanent fund dividends, interest from stocks, that would not be included.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So it has to be direct earned income.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr. Peterson. Okay, thank you. Okay. Thank you. So what we're going to do now is we will now open public testimony on SB 50. Okay. So we have, let me just go look at the timing here. We have a few folks that signed up before 9 a.m., and these are off-net, so we're going to go with the before 9 a.m., and then when we get to 9 a.m., there's a couple folks in the room here, okay? So what we have first is Mr. Jim Anderson, the CFO of Anchor School District. We will have 2 minutes, and I have my watch here. Okay, so we'll have 2 minutes. So Mr. Anderson, please state your name for the record and start your testimony whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Senator. Good morning. I'm Jim Anderson. I'm the Chief Finance Officer for Anchorage School District, and I am calling in support of Senate Bill 50 as a reasonable mechanism in which to fund capital improvements toward the state's education facilities. It does allow for a different revenue source in which to provide support to the state's rural districts predominantly, and possibly some support for the urban districts. Dr. Dina Bishop, our district superintendent, has already provided a letter of support for this bill. ASD supports this bill knowing that our district won't likely receive a substantial amount of assistance, as the capital grant program historically favors certainly our rural districts. With state bond debt assistance remaining at 0% for this year's bond proposition, and the very real potential to have state debt assistance reduced for older bonds, yet again, this bill at least reinforces the need to maintain the state's infrastructure. I applaud Senator Bishop's recognition that our education facilities are absolutely necessary in order to prepare our students for the future, and the burden to maintain facilities belongs to all Alaskans, plus those who live outside Alaska but choose to work in this great state. It takes a large community to raise so many children. I'd like to thank the members of this committee for your time and for all of your efforts during this challenging legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson, for your testimony. Next up, we have Trevor Storrs, and followed by Tom Claymeyer. So, Mr. Storrs, whenever you're ready.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
We can, loud and clear.
Right.
For the record, Trevor Storrs, President and CEO of the Alaska Children's Trust. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on SB 50, and thank you to Senator Bishop for your continued leadership and dedication to our children and families. As the statewide leader in the prevention of child abuse and neglect, we are in support of SB 50. I'd like you to pause for a moment and consider, what do we want Alaska to look like? What is our vision for our community? We're in support of this bill's goal of investing in our schools and, by extension, our children, because it imagines an Alaska that provides a quality, equitable education for all children. We also support this bill for recognizing that we need to find new streams of revenue instead of simply continuing to make harmful cuts to our communities. Our schools are suffering, our classrooms are aging, and with the last 5 years of reductions in flat funding, they are unable to make repairs or construct new spaces. SB 50 will help address this issue. But I want to remind the committee that providing a quality education isn't simply about building schools. It's about taking steps to ensure our children are given all the tools they need to show up at school ready to learn. This includes supporting Alaska's families, making sure children get things like breakfast before school starts, and ensuring they have somewhere to sleep at night. Regardless of how nice the school is, if a child arrives hungry or is experiencing homelessness or doesn't have access to pediatrician or medical assistance, that child isn't ready to learn. ACT supports the goal and purpose behind SB 50, but I would also be remiss if I don't remind the legislature that an employment head tax is by nature regressive. This tax will place an unfair burden on the low-income families. It is important that the legislature begins to explore more equitable ways in generating revenue to further strengthen our great state. In conclusion, we do support SB 50, and we thank you for this opportunity to testify today, and thank you for continuing to invest in our greatest resource, the next generation.
Thank you, Mr. Storrs, for your testimony. Next up, we have Tom Kleinmeier, followed by Carrie Boyd.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Kleinmeier, a 24-year social studies teacher in the Anchorage School District, and I'm now serving as the president of the Anchorage Education Association. I appreciate the opportunity to testify again, thank you also to Senator Bishop for bringing this bill forward. I testified Wednesday on SB 6, if you recall, so I'll try not to be redundant there, but we'd have over 30,000 other people calling in today if I could, but they're all teaching in their classrooms, and so I'm going to have to testify on their behalf again. This bill, while it does not represent the entire solution, is a modest step in the right direction. So much of the conversations about schools is about what cuts should be made, and we're truly to the point where there are no cuts which can be made that do not adversely affect districts' ability to deliver services or ultimately student outcomes. While we've been blessed over the last several decades with the revenues generated by oil extraction, I think we might have gotten spoiled a little bit. Considering the new leaner fiscal regime over the last several years that we've been forced into, I think it's time to consider other revenue streams to provide the services that make our communities the wonderful places that we'd like them to be. And of course, having well-maintained, safe public schools is definitely a large part of that. Given our state history, I also appreciate this is not a new revenue stream, but one that was sort of temporarily suspended while we could afford not to have it. And so I think returning to it is prudent at this time. So as such, I would urge support of this bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinmeier, for your testimony. We have Carrie Boyd, and then followed by Caroline Storm. So, Carrie Boyd, UConn.
Oh, good morning. For the record, I am Carrie Boyd, superintendent of UConn Koyukuk School District, and I'm also president-elect of the Alaska Superintendent Association. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 50. Thank you especially to Senator Bishop for always looking for innovative ways to provide a fully diversified revenue stream. As you know, many schools across the state have struggled with recent years as funding has been remaining flat, operational costs are rising. Health care costs, ours has gone up in our district from 2018 to today, $1 million. And more revenue maintenance projects are deferred. It's leaving superintendents and communities with difficult financial decisions to make, whether it's a program, a staff, or which repairs are going to be made. It's clear that the state of Alaska needs to come up with solutions to address this need to maintain and construct schools. Senate Bill 50 is a great approach. It's a reasonable approach that helps us move forward with a revenue source to address the basic needs. As an REA district especially, this gives us some hope that we may not have to wait years and years to get funded on that list that was referenced earlier today. I just want to thank you, and on behalf of the ASA and Yukon Koyukuk School District Board of Education, thank you for the opportunity. We fully support this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Boyd, for your testimony. Okay, so next up we have Ms. Carolyn Storm, and then followed by, it looks like Nils Andreasen is here. I can't see him, but, oh, there he is. Okay, so Nils, whenever, just know that after the next testifier, you're up, okay? So we have Ms. Carolyn Storm, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Senate Finance Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to take public testimony or provide public testimony. My name is Caroline Storm. I'm a self-employed architect in Anchorage. Full disclosure, I have worked on some ASD facilities. I'm calling this morning in support of SB 50, and thank you to Senator Bishop for bringing this bill forward. I just think it is prudent to have funds available to maintain our buildings, our school buildings. The state and municipalities have invested a lot of money into the facilities, and they need to be maintained. Deferring maintenance is costing the state much more in the end than just having funds available for regular maintenance and building new facilities. I want to say that I am a little concerned about the nature of this this tax, if you will, because it is regressive. And I think it would be prudent to try and find some other mechanisms to fund deferred maintenance and maintenance of our facilities. But overall, I do support the bill. And I also want to thank Jim Anderson, Trevor Storrs, and Tom Claymeyer for their testimony, and I echo their testimony as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Storm, for your testimony. Appreciate you calling in. So we have Mr. Andreasen.
Thank you, Chair Von Imhoff. For the record, my name's Nils Andreasen. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. I feel like the last time I was in front of this committee, I was here in support of a tax. I will double down. And I think the important thing to know is not because I like taxes, but because local governments are comfortable and understand the nature of tax. And in fact, the legislature and state require local governments to tax. So the largest tax collector in the state right now are local governments, given the state's current condition. AML members in November voted in support of a tax that supports school construction and major maintenance. And when we look back at the history of the state's funding for those items, and really for what's a constitutional obligation of the state, just for the grant programs that the state has had in place, we see that on average the state has funded those needs at about 15% per year. That since the moratorium on school bond, prior to the moratorium on school bond debt reimbursement, municipalities didn't apply to that grant program at all. And that we'll see in future years an increasing need in response from local governments for the state to fulfill that constitutional obligation. We look at 1,008 schools and educational facilities in the school in the state, 429 of which are older than 40 years old. the average age at which schools very much need major maintenance or replacement. And we look at that total number of school and see that more than 75% of them are municipal owned and maintained. Not, again, on behalf of the state, I look at the FY21 need, $291 million in need for school construction and major maintenance. This $13 million accommodates 4% of 100% of the state's constitutional obligation. Finally, I look at a six-year plan provided by DEED that points to $1.3 billion in major maintenance and school construction needs, with 16 districts not included on that list. And I can imagine that if we look at average for the needs that have been identified by school districts, that six-year plan is more like $2.9 billion. So we're very much in favor and support of this bill. We're making a small step toward addressing what we see as a very large need. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dresden. Appreciate it. So is there anyone else in the room that wishes to testify? Okay. Is there anyone else online? Okay, I see. So the one we're going to have Ms. Lisa Parody. Whenever you're ready.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Dr. Lisa Skiles Parody. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. We represent superintendents, secondary principals, elementary principals, school business officials, and the hardworking school administrators all across Alaska serving our students today. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 50, and thank Senator Bishop for bringing this bill and your leadership and continuing to chip away at enhanced revenue. I will echo the comments made by my members who previously testified to you today, Mr. Anderson, Ms. Boyd, and I think that this was going to be handed out to you. Do you have it? No? Where'd it go?
We're going to have an, let's have an Addies real quick.
So following the meeting, I'll direct your attention to our joint position statements. And these are statements that are worked on from the time you adjourn to when you basically, about a month before you come back, by all of our members. And they are the consensus across our members of what the highest priorities are in public education. So to kind of bring everything together. And one of the highest priorities is revenue enhanced fiscal plan imperative. And I'll just read a short bit to you, but hopefully you'll have a second to read it at a later point. The need to finalize and implement a long-term multi-revenue fiscal plan remains, especially with the commitment to additional PFD payments. Diversified revenue streams would continue to address the remaining deficit and ensure the ability to fund service increases associated with economic development, inflation, and deferred maintenance capital requirements while maintaining existing minimal reserves in the CBR. So we anticipate and support these kinds of efforts. The proposed head tax would increase revenue generating approximately $13 million each year, which is approximately only 4% of the need. And I just urge you to recognize the void of the number that represents the need in terms of school maintenance and construction. And this is a huge effort in the right direction. We have to continue to work on it, invest in our schools. It also captures a piece of the $2.5 billion in non-resident income that leaves the state each year from roughly 20% of our workers who earn their living in Alaska but do not reside here. We support this long-term plan to increase state revenue while we'll continue to advocate for diverse revenue streams to address the remaining deficits. And we support the legislature's proposition to deposit the revenue into the state's general fund and account for it separately to pay for growing maintenance and construction needs of our schools. I echo the remarks of my colleague from AML, Nils Andreasen, so won't continue, but please consider supporting this bill and appreciate your time and your service. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, do we have anyone else in the room? Anyone else online? Okay, public testimony is now closed. So, Senator Stedman, would you like to do the fiscal notes or should I pass it to Mr. Brandon Spanos? Okay, thank you.
The chairman asked me to kind of go over the fiscal notes. So we've got a couple of them here. One is an OMB component, 2276, unemployment insurance. It's in the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. It is all zeroed out. The second one, the department is the Department of Revenue, Tax and Treasury. The allocation, of course, is the tax division. OMB component, 2476. And that shows, Madam Chairman, that the expectation is to generate around $9,344,000 in unrestricted general funds, adding roughly eight people and having an operating cost of $762,000. That's about a half year. The second year on, FY22, expenditures is expected to be about the same, $762,000. Still have eight people, but the revenue projection is around $13,400,000 rounded off, and then slowly escalate from there. That, Madam Chairman, is the two fiscal notes.
So I believe, though, there is a capital investment of $11 million. So, Mr. Senator Stedman, did you want to, if you look at the implementation costs on page two of the fiscal note?
Right. There is some discussion of a $11 million implementation cost and also some historic conversation in the fiscal notes. Comparing the previous attempts at this type of tax structure, requiring a significant amount, 30 people instead of eight. So this is a little different proposal for those that have a little history on the head tax, employment head tax. It's a simpler and more straight forward implementation, which leads to lower capital cost at $11 million and a lower employee change down from 30 to 8.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. I do know that when we were looking at this bill last year, I think the TRMS request was $8 million last year. So that is a $3 million increase to $11 million. And I see that Mr. Brandon Spanos is online, and if he wanted to comment on the $11 million price tag, particularly up from $8 million last year.
Yes, Madam Chair. For the record, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Department of Revenue Tax Division. And the implementation cost did go up from the $8 million to $11 million, so a $3 million difference. The main reason for that is that our system was originally rolled out in 2014, and so it is version 9 of a customized off-the-shelf system called Gentex, and internally we call it our tax revenue management system, or TRIMS. The Gentex system is now on version 12 and working on version 13. And so a broad-based tax, even though this isn't a major revenue generator, it still is would require the same development as any other broad-based tax. And we feel that it's time to move on to that new system before coding a new tax. So rather than coding it in the old version 9, we would code it in the new version 12, but it would require an entire upgrade to the system and hence the $3 million price tag.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Spanos. We have a couple questions here. We're going to start with Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Wilson.
Thank you. Mr. Spanos, I'm not implying anything here in the future, but I'm asking the question. So the increase, I understand that, but if this new system is implemented, is it expandable without an increase in revenue for another capital request?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, it would depend on what that increase is. So if it's merely a change to the rate, for instance, so rather than $30, if it was $50 or some other number, that would require no additional capital increase. There is funding in the current proposed budget for maintenance and support of our TRIM system, which does keep fast contractors on site to make those types of changes and do other. So if the structure changed to add in a tax on capital gains or something like that, it would require slightly more programming. But yes, it would be very expandable. The difference between version 9 and version 12 also allows things like accessing your tax data on your cell phone or on a mobile device. And so a lot of it's much more future-proof, and some of the programming that would expand a tax could be done without any additional cost, except for the costs that are already in the ongoing operating budget, should that pass. If it was a major change, like expanding it to a full income tax that would require a full income tax return, that would be considerable more programming, and that would require an additional capital cost.
Thank you.
Senator Wilson.
Yeah, I just want to ask a couple of clarifying questions here on both these notes. The Department of Revenue or the Department of Labor will be collecting the tax?
So through the chair, I can respond to that, Senator Wilson. The $11 million budget request on this note would be for Department of Revenue to collect and administer the tax. I have spoken with Department of Labor. They have noted that they could collect the tax. However, they would simply collect and remit the tax to us. So we would still need to register all of the taxpayers for, in the case of a refund, for instance, coming back to your earlier question, if someone had two jobs in January, then it's unlikely that they would be able to show their second employer that they had already paid the tax, because likely the tax would be taken out of both paychecks at once. And so we would want to be able to register all the taxpayers if Department of Labor were collecting the tax and remitting it to us, so that we could refund that later to them. If we do it ourselves, I've been talking with our contractor and discussing different options that we could do to build this system. It's possible that we could, with that new version 12, have a system that would not allow a payment to be made twice for the same individual. So when an employer makes a payment to the Department of Revenue, they would upload their data, and it could be checked against payments already made. So if an employer logged in even minutes before and made a payment on behalf of another employee or on behalf of an individual, and another employer had that same individual employed and uploaded to the system later, it could ping the system and report back to the employer that the amount's already been withheld. Okay. So there are some possibilities to mitigate that. It is a pretty robust system, but our note is assuming that we would do all of the collecting and administering of the program.
Thank you. Senator Wilson, you have a follow-up.
Yes, then, because in the legislation it states that the Department of Labor will collect the tax and then remit it to the Department of Revenue. So I'm just asking, does that need to be cleaned up and just remove the Department of Labor within the piece of legislation and then just replace it with the Department of Revenue?
We have Mr. Darwin Peterson at the head of the table that would like to answer this question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator Bishop. Senator Wilson, in answer to your question, on page 3, yeah, lines 17 through 23, this language was inserted giving the Department of Labor the
option of collecting if it were cheaper. So in the event that the bill passes and becomes law, there will be a cost-benefit analysis that would be conducted to see whether it's cheaper for the Department of Labor to collect it like they currently do with UI taxes and submit it to the Department of Revenue. If it's not cheaper, then Department of Revenue would collect it.
Senator Wilson?
Okay.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just need a little bit of help from the bill sponsor dealing so I understand. In the commercial fishing and processing industry, we have our territorial waters are 3 miles. How does the tax is proposed to work dealing with fish processors and fishing vessels?
I'll take the first stab at that, Madam Chair. The outside the 3 mile limit, I don't think they would be apply. It would apply, and Darwin can answer the rest of that question.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I'm assuming that these would be self-employed individuals.
If I could, a lot of the floating fish processors, I don't think a lot of their crew are self-employed, and then the fishing vessels are mostly self-employed. So there's kind of have both, but I'm not so sure on the processors, being in or outside of the 3 mile limit, and then the fishing boats, if they come in or out of the 3 mile limit.
So the chair, Senator Stitt.
And also if I could, and how we would, what would be the mechanism to keep track of it or enforce it, or is it just going to be an honor system?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, for the businesses that are the fish processors, they would be required to withhold $30 from the first paycheck of every employee and submit it. If they didn't, there would be a penalty that the Department of Revenue could impose. For the fishing vessels, they would have to have a business license as a self-employed individual in the state. They would have to self-remit. And the enforcement aspect that you're asking about, we did have this conversation in the previous committee, and I would defer to Brandon Spanos to explain to the committee how the enforcement of collecting the tax from those self-employed individuals who don't pay.
So, Mr. Spanos, could you respond to Senator Stedman about enforcement of individuals in self-employment fields?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, the self-employed have to file a 1099 with the federal IRS, Department of Treasury, and we would require them to also file that 1099 with us. I said employer, the payor. So the companies that are paying the wages to the self-employed have to complete a 1099. We would get a copy of that 1099. And then we would expect a return to be filed by the self-employed. If they didn't file a return with us, we'd send out a letter that would basically say, it appears that you had wages, or rather you had income earned in Alaska, and you haven't filed a return, please file a return. Most states that have a tax based on income, they'll send out a letter like that, and if they don't get a response, they'll send out a more threatening letter, and then eventually they may just assess the tax. In the previous committee, I noted that because this tax is only $30, it's unlikely we would have pursue much of that because there is a cost to trying to collect $30. So we would likely make an assessment if it was really clear that somebody had earned income in Alaska, and we would request for that to be paid. And then we do have an automated, our TRIM system does have an automated collection function that is quite robust and has does have low cost to it. But again, it's unlikely we would pursue a $30 tax like we would if it was a $1,000 tax.
Senator Stedman, follow up.
Sounds like we might be subject to some leakage here because there's a lot of fishermen that reside in Washington State or elsewhere outside of Alaska. We have a lot of permits out of state. They come up fish in the state waters and they're gone. So it might be something to try to, as this bill moves through the system, try to minimize the leakage on that. We've always struggled with the loss of our permits and our outside fishermen coming in, and you know, we've got a lot of infrastructure we pay for, and they frankly get a low budget ride economically.
Senator Stedman, or Senator Bishop.
Yes, to Senator Stedman's point, he brings up a good point. And I know from my past experience as Commissioner of Labor with floating processors inside the 3-mile limit, I would just respectfully throw a suggestion to the chair that maybe when you schedule the bill again, that we have Department of Labor wage and hour, Mr. Mitchell, come up and talk to us about how that they might help enforce that with the floating processors.
Thank you. I made a note of that. Senator Wilkowski has a question.
Thank you. I guess sort of in the same vein, how do you deal with a teenager who's doing babysitting? Is that, I assume they're covered. I assume that's wages. Would that have to submit something to the Department of Labor?
I think, Mr. Spanos, is it only if they make more than $600? I mean, I don't know. What is the answer to that?
So through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I'm trying to remember if the bill had addressed that or not. But technically, someone who's babysitting is self-employed. A payor, like a company paying self-employed, would have to file a 1099 only if they're making a payment over, I can't remember the exact dollar amount, $500 or $600. So generally, somebody who's babysitting isn't going to get a 1099. The state wouldn't know about them being employed. They would have to self-report that amount for us to know about it. Some states do have an allowance for that type of work, but technically it is self-employed income. The IRS doesn't require a tax return to be filed unless you make over, I think it's $1,300. So it could be structured to read something like that.
Senator Wilkowski.
Slightly different area, but would unemployment benefits or workers' compensation benefits be considered wages? Do you know?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, they are, for federal tax purposes, considered wages.
How about for this bill's purposes?
For the bill purpose, let me refer back to the bill.
If you need to, Mr. Spanos, we can get that response in writing to the committee at
a
later date.
We have to follow up.
All right. If you can follow up, that would be great.
Okay.
Are there any other questions for the bill sponsor or Mr. Spanos? Okay. Seeing none at this time. We will set Senate Bill 50 aside at this time. Please contact my office as soon as possible about any concerns or amendments. I've made a note of your recommendation, Senator Bishop, about having Department of Labor. That concludes today's meeting. Our next meeting will be Monday at 9 a.m. We will be hearing an analysis of the ballot initiative 190 GTX by Rich and Christina Ruggiero. We are adjourned.